Okay, good morning. Welcome to this month's MicroLink seminar. I'm Kristen Oplanik from USAID's Bureau for Economic Growth, Education, and Environment. Today's seminar is a collaboration with the Digital Finance team in USAID's Global Development Lab. Digital finance and its intersection with gender is something USAID is closely following, especially as we see potential to build out inclusive infrastructure. If you haven't seen the call for examples of digital finance inclusion, check it out on MicroLinks. So let's get to the topic at hand, digitizing financial solutions to advance women's economic participation. We recognize that greater participation by women can drive economic growth and stability, but how do we increase this participation? It's a challenge we've been working on for a long time. Digital financial services present a different means to improve this participation. With digital infrastructure providing increased access to relevant financial services, women are gaining greater control over resources, improving the performance of their enterprises, and participating in more opportunities, which is what we want to see. Our presenters today will share insights from the recent report to the G20 Partnership for Financial Inclusion, Digital Financial Solutions to Advance Women's Participation. Now, let me briefly introduce our speakers, and then I'll pass the mic over to them. Dr. Ruth Goodwin-Grohn is the Managing Director of the UN HAL's Better Than Cash Alliance, leading its efforts to accelerate the global shift from cash to digital payments. She represents Better Than Cash Alliance at the G20 Global Partnership for Financial Inclusion, is a member of the World Economic Forum Financial Inclusion Steering Committee, and a member of the reference group of the United Nations Secretary General's Special Advocate for Inclusive Finance for Development. That's a mouthful. Dr. Leora Clapper is a lead economist in the finance and private sector research team of the Development Research Group at the World Bank. Her publications focus on corporate and consumer finance, entrepreneurship, and risk management. Her current research studies the impact of digital financial services, especially for women. She is the founder of the Global Findex database, which measures how adults around the world save, borrow, make payments, and manage risks. Thank you for joining us today, ladies.
It's great to see everybody here today. I'm Ruth Goodwin-Grohn, as you know, and Kristen said many of us have been working on increasing women's economic participation and empowerment for many years. But this is a very exciting time to be involved because there's tremendous momentum at the moment. The momentum is coming from those who care about economic growth because we are learning. There's new data coming out every day about how important the work that women is doing already is recognized to drive economic growth. For those of us who care about poverty reduction, we know that women are the majority of those who are poor, and so it's really, and they work very hard. So it's tremendously important to increase their economic participation for their own ability to move out of poverty, as well as for the economy. And those of us who care about inclusion, there's tremendous momentum on that side too, because we have the technology now, increasing technology to ensure that those women who live in remote rural areas have access as well. So with the momentum from the growth crew, from the poverty reduction crew, from the inclusion and technology sides, we've got all these factors moving towards opportunities for advancing women's economic participation and inclusion. And so the report, as Kristen said, that we prepared for the G20 leaders, the Turkish presidency last year, builds on all that work. The G20 leaders, as you know, it's the world's 20 largest economies, 85% of the global economy. And they realized last year in their leaders communique that it was vital to increase women's participation in the labor force. They committed to 100 million more women being involved in the labor force by 2025. That means reducing the gender disparity in workforce participation by 25%. That's a big commitment by those leaders. And so last year, under the Turkish presidency, the Better Than Cash Alliance and the World Bank suggested to the Turkish presidency that this was a time to focus on digital financial solutions to advance women's economic participation. So that's why we have the report that was attached to the leaders' communique in November last year. That means Prime Minister Modi, President Obama, Angela Merkel, you know, all, I should say, Prime Minister Merkel, Prime Minister Cameron, all the leaders are behind this movement, so it's super exciting. So I want to also, by way of introduction, saying that this was a team effort. I'm from the Better Than Cash Alliance, Leora from the World Bank. Our co-steering committee members were Women's World Banking, that's also a member of the Better Than Cash Alliance and an affiliated partner of the G20 Global Partnership for Financial Inclusion. Of course, they are very important partners, as well as the Gates Foundation. But of course, we have to recognize there was tremendous input by the members of the Global Partnership for Financial Inclusion. I see Loretta here from the US Treasury, who is a key contributor, as well as all the other members and other implementing partners, including the Consultative Group to Assist the Poor, the IFC, IFAD, OECD. They were all contributing to this. So this has been a real team effort because of the importance of this issue. So that's by way of introduction, and I'm going to ask Leora now to summarize the highlights of this report for you.
Thank you. Let's jump in, look at some of the data. As Ruth mentioned, you know, the motivation for this work is one simple fact that about half of women around the world are in the labor force. That's compared to about 70% of men. So here's our first challenge. When we also look at what women are doing in the workforce, we see that in high-income countries, the majority, almost all women in the workforce, are wage-employed, just seeking a good job. Whereas as we move to lower-income countries, women, the vast, vast majority of women, are what they self-reported self-employed. And this is important. There are some of those women who are pulled into entrepreneurship because they have a great idea. But the vast majority are women who are pushed into self-employment out of necessity, just to feed their families. And so as we talk about the benefits of digital financial payments, it's important to remember that, one, these are women who often have tremendous family responsibilities as well, or cultural norms that make it harder for them to travel longer distances. And secondly, any sort of cost saving is really critical for these women to feed their families. And so this is a takeaway from this slide. Again, the turquoise blue are women who are self-employed versus the navy blue of wage workers in the higher income countries. And so, indeed, what we'll talk about is the increasing use of innovative digital financial products, you know, as reported in 11 countries. The majority of businesswomen are taking advantage of these this new technology to grow their businesses. And so what are the benefits of digital financial payments? I'll start by giving an overview of the benefits and then the challenges, and then actions that governments, the private sector, the financial sector, donors, those of us in the room, can take. And so one benefit is simply with the introduction and the creation of new digital financial products are the opportunities to expand financial inclusion, to expand account ownership for women. And there's growing rigorous academic research of the benefits, simply safety. Women are more vulnerable to theft, not walking around with a wad of cash in their pocket. There's also the idea that digital payments give women privacy and confidentiality over their money. There's also control over the money. There's very nice research coming out of both Africa and Asia showing that giving a woman an account to keep her money outside of the home gives her greater control and influence over household budget decisions, even to the extent of greater household spending on nutritious food. And so, however, at the starting gate, women are at disadvantage. The Global Findex data shows a persistent gender gap in account ownership around the world, shown on the left. We find in 2014 a 9 percentage point gap in account ownership between men and women, and that masks some larger regional variation. For example, in India, men are more than 20 percentage points more likely than women to have an account. We are claiming that, for example, mobile technology can offer greater affordability and convenience for account ownership, especially for women. It may be more difficult for women to travel to the city to use a bank branch, but there's more likely to be a mobile money agent in her village for her to access a mobile phone account. However, women are still lagging at making mobile money account payments, as shown in the bottom figure, for reasons we'll get into. And we're trying to start looking at the evidence. We're starting to see in places like Cote d'Ivoire and Kenya, where mobile banking is rapidly growing in Cote d'Ivoire, There is a gap in account ownership between men and women. However, we find that among mobile account owners, there is no gender gap. However, Uganda and Tanzania, we continue to see a gap in both bank and mobile accounts. And let me just pause here for a minute again. You know, what is this power of the mobile technology? So what we're learning is what women need is the ability to make frequent, low-denomination payments, okay? And so what do they need this money for? They have a dollar at the end of the day that they don't want to keep in their home because they fear a neighbor, a family member will take the money. It's too difficult for them to take a bus across town to deposit that money in a bank every day. And so what women are doing is they're paying huge negative interest rates to susu collectors, collectors that come to their home to take that $1 from them because they can't keep it in their home. And again, it's the frequent payment, the daily payments of a small denomination. And that's where mobile money shows great promise. Bank products aren't designed for that kind of frequent low denomination transactions, whereas mobile payments are. You can go in every day on your way home into the mobile agent on your block and virtually for free deposit that dollar into your mobile money wallet, which is a safe place to keep the money outside the home. And so this frequent low denomination payments, for both businesswomen and all women, is something we'll talk about. And let me also just add the caveat, a little sheepish, that clearly all the benefits we're talking about are important for men as well. We're just highlighting that because of the nature of women's position within the household, because of safety, we believe these are can potentially disproportionately help bring women into both the financial system and into the labor force, where they've both been positioned at a disadvantage so far. So the other benefits, I'm just going to go briefly over, and we'll get into some examples as the presentation goes on. Is this idea that online, for example, there's been tremendous World Bank efforts to digitize business registries and, importantly, to allow digital payments for the registration fees. It's not enough to allow someone to register their business online if they have to travel to the city to pay the registration fee. And also, we know that women are more likely to be shaken down for informal payments than men. And we like to say it's harder to shake someone down electronically over the internet. So the use of mobile phones to register a business and make other business payments is important. It's not only for businesses. Interesting example the World Bank was working on. In Kenya, midwives are now using mobile phones to register births in Zambia. And so it's being used to create all sorts of databases which are critically important to get women in the system. Provides ways to reduce the gender gap in business ownership by improving access, for example, to online procurement. The World Bank's been involved in helping governments set up online procurement, which just basically widens the net of people who can bid on various contracts. Increases participation in e-commerce. I was speaking with a group of the Middle East Women's Entrepreneurship Association, and what was really notable was that many of the women in the room were involved in import-export. It's often very difficult for them to work publicly in their own countries, but over the internet, no one knows they're a woman. Over the internet, they're able to both procure and sell more easily. And then finally, for larger firms who are trying to have a formal presence in the country, who wish to sell to export and sell to large domestic firms, they're able to pay their VAT and other taxes online. Digital payments also facilitate savings. Think about, many of us hopefully save using a 401k or other auto deposit mechanism. Auto deposit only works if you have electronic wage payments in the first place. The biggest challenge to saving is actually taking that step to go to the bank, wait online, and make a deposit. Once the pay is electronic, it's easier. And what's interesting is, I've been working in Ghana, Bangladesh, there's numerous studies throughout Africa showing a huge appetite for these sort of commitment savings. There's a number of projects now in Africa, for example, that set up an auto deposit feature from a mobile wallet into a bank account. And so you can, on a regular basis, put small denominations into your mobile wallet, and once a week, that money is swept into a bank account that pays interest. And so it's this interoperability, this interaction between mobile accounts and bank accounts, which is providing greater savings services. The figure on the left, what that's showing is in the FinDecs, we ask, are you saving to start or grow a business? And later on, are you borrowing to start or grow a business? And not surprisingly, many more adults, especially women, are saying they're saving. Women are, we know, are often have greater credit constraints, less likely to own assets in their name, have a credit history, poorer credit. However, so savings is a critical component to start and grow a business, and facilitating savings is important. I was mentioning earlier about the negative interest rate. You know, one of the great mysteries on the Findex data was the number, again, of especially women, places like Nigeria, who had an account but reported using RASCAs, community savings groups, or SUSUs, these money collectors. And, you know, we like to think that once you graduate to the formal sector, why would you ever go back to the informal sector? And when we spoke to them, this is, again, what they told us, that they need to save money on a daily basis, and it's just too inconvenient to go to the bank. And so this is where, you know, innovative digital products such as mobile wallets is making a difference. And we're already seeing, you know, an example I mentioned earlier in Kenya with M-Shwari, which allows people to move money from their mobile wallet into an interest-bearing savings account, and in that savings account develop a payment and savings history to access appropriate credit. Digital payments can also improve operational efficiency of firms. Again, as I mentioned, it reduces the simple travel time necessary to access banks, which in many countries is, again, more difficult for women, the security benefits. And this one, third one's very important, the instant remittance of money. This comes up especially with weather insurance. Familiar with, it's almost like a lottery ticket. You're literally betting against the weather. It doesn't require anyone to investigate your crops or your output. It's literally a lottery card on whether it's gonna, whether there's a monsoon or not. And so if you have an account, that money can be sent automatically. Otherwise, you know, we hear reports of months and months until people receive their insurance payments. And those are the months that are critical, that the farmer is unable to both for subsistence have the money, as well as begin investing in the crops to grow his next, the seeds to grow his next crop. So this instant remittance of money. Also, social networks. There's great work out of Kenya showing that people who participate in M-Pesa, when an emergency strikes, the death of a family member, unemployment, they're able to get money from a wider, literal, geographic circle and network of friends. This also is a case, better than cash, is documented nicely. You know, when the Ebola crisis hit, the USAID, I believe, and others were able to very quickly get money to health workers through a mobile account, even in areas which might be unbanked. As I mentioned, again, building a payment history, and this we'll get back, I'll get into a little bit later, I think is, you know, extremely exciting and important. Women are less likely to have credit ratings in developing countries. We know that. They're less likely to have assets in their own name. They're less likely to, even in high-income countries, less likely to have the water bill, the electric bill, or the credit card in their name. They're less likely to have a credit footprint. What is being developed, and interestingly, you know, most excitingly in Africa, is the development of payment registries, where if you receive and make payments on a regular basis, that's information that can be used to tell whether you can repay your loan. And increasingly, this information is being used to provide loans, especially for small businesses, that can grow over time. And also online loan repayment. We know, banks know that the number one predictor of being able to repay your loan is being able to conveniently repay your loan. Having auto-pay features is critical for that. Okay, digitized contract and delivery records and trade receivables. Area I'm personally passionate about. So this starts with, and we'll talk again later about some examples. First of all, increasingly firms putting online any contract they extend to a small firm. The firm can use that digital information to get contract financing. The big firms are now also posting the day that goods are delivered, so that can be converted into factoring and other receivable financing. It's also the flip side of the coin, that firms are also posting online their supplier credit that they're providing. And so, again, allowing the small firms to build a payment history. I'm involved in the World Bank in a project in Kenya where the World Bank has created a supplier credit registry for all pharmacies in the country, where the large pharmaceutical distributors are contributing to a bureau on supplier payment information that will be shared among the pharmacies as well as with financial institutions. And finally, access to commitment products. We mentioned earlier, being able to sweep money into a savings product or to repay a loan facilitates savings and online payments. Okay, so there are lots of benefits, but why, if the benefits are so large, why isn't everybody online? So there are challenges. For example, lack of formal identification, financial identification. More than 2 billion adults worldwide lack any identification. One good example, the success story, we like to say if you do it in India, you can do it anywhere, is the Aadhaar card. In India, there are over 950 million Aadhaar cards, which is a digital financial identification that can be used. We're working on a new survey on the provision of government services in India. If you have that Aadhaar card, everything is easier for you. You can to use to receive government, to sign up for various government services, to open a bank account, you have identification. We also find legal barriers. So here it's sort of interesting. So the World Bank's Women, Business, and the Law database, which is an extension of the Doing Business database, collects data on legal barriers to women's economic and other participation. So honestly, there aren't a lot of countries that have explicit financial legal barriers to women. However, there are important and more subtle barriers. For example, many countries have travel restrictions. Women can't stay in a hotel on their own, which makes it more difficult for them to visit clients. There are also tremendous legal barriers against women's inheritance, which again affects her asset ownership and ability to start and grow a business. So, and here's an example, I'm not sure if this was legal or cultural norm, where married women, for example, aren't allowed to participate in farmers group, where both credit and seeds and important technical information is shared. There's also lower financial literacy. This is from the new S&P Financial Literacy Database, which was published in October, and available online, which shows that, so here there are questions being asked on inflation, on interest compounding, on discounting, simply that women are less able to understand these concepts. And it wasn't a math test, it was just more conceptually, does your money grow over time, understanding the concept of compound interest, which would encourage you to save your money in the bank. So overall, women have, in general, on average, are less aware of these concepts. And this growing academic literature that it's really hard to teach these concepts, either in a classroom or through written or video material, which really highlights the other side, the importance of appropriate consumer protection frameworks, important disclosure and transparency, important product design. It's very hard for many women in developing countries to remember a PIN number. To the point, and there's also the additional challenge in many Arab, in some languages where numbers are written from right to left. The woman finally memorizes the number and then puts it in backwards. But so again, this appropriate design of financial products to make it easier for often illiterate, less educated populations to use the services is important for any take up. And we'll talk about it, especially as the government moves into making social payments online, which has tremendous benefits for the government in terms of cost savings, increased transparency, reduction in leakage. We have to keep this client focused, remembering that the recipients of government payments are often the most vulnerable, least educated segment of the population, least familiar with using more sophisticated financial products, and making sure that they understand how to use a PIN number to keep it private, the recourse. We've been hearing stories of a large new government digital disbursement program, where if a woman loses her PIN number, it can take up to 6 months to get a replacement number. After 6 months, the woman can't access her money that she and her family might desperately need. And finally, what is perhaps the biggest barrier is the simple gap in phone ownership between men and women that we see around the world. There are almost 2 billion women around the world don't have a phone. The map on the bottom shows that in many African countries, and unfortunately, we only have this data for Africa, there's a huge gap in ownerships of mobile phones between men and women. And again, at the starting gate, for a woman to have ownership and control over her funds, she needs to own her own phone. There are also tremendous cultural barriers. I'm doing a project in Bangladesh among wage workers where we're moving them from cash to electronic payments, including to mobile phones. And a large, very large number of women, women who didn't own, we give to both the men and women mobile phones to receive their electronic wage payments. Many women come back to us the next day saying, my husband said I'm not allowed to have my own phone, returning the phone to us. And we hear this, across many countries. And so this is a cultural barrier a barrier that we really need to address. Here again, this is a very nice picture from GSMA, from a wonderful recent publication on the gender gap in mobile banking, mobile phone ownership, which shows and really highlights just the large gap around the world in phone ownership. Not only is there phone ownership, remember, a phone is no longer just used to make phone calls, it's the access to the internet. When we ask people about, do you have access to the internet in your home, they're not thinking Wi-Fi. You know, the vast majority in developing countries, it's through a mobile phone. And so I was actually surprised. You would think, 50-50 if equal numbers of men and women live in homes. We have in the Gallup World Poll question, do you have access to the internet in your home? And to our surprise, numbers here, in South Asia, for example, women are half as likely as men to report having access to the internet in their home. And that's likely because the internet is coming via mobile phone, which they don't necessarily have access to. So, what can we do about this? And Ruth, you're welcome to jump in. So let's start with the government, government actions. First and foremost, digitize government's payments. I mentioned earlier, big cost savings, reduced leakage, reduced, more likely that the intended recipient receives the money. Although as shown as this figure, there's still a lot of payments being made in cash. Now, keep in mind the scale in lower income countries, they don't necessarily make a lot of, there's a small percentage of adults that receive any government payments. We still find that there are over 80 million unbanked women who receive a government transfer or their wages in cash from the government. So, for example, Mexico has reported saving over $1.3 billion after digitizing their own payment, and Pakistan and Bangladesh have also moved towards digital payments.
Leora, yes, it would be worth highlighting there is that the women's aspect of that is that, of course, many of the payments go to women for whatever purpose it is. It's a poverty reduction aspect, and so it goes to women. So this is critically important for women having access to services. If you look at the numbers, we talked about Mexico's there. There's a very, very minimal gender difference in financial inclusion in Mexico. Those of you who know that there's a very small difference also in South Africa that has digitized their payments. These are not perfect programs, we all know, but in terms of making a difference for women's financial inclusion, these are vitally important ways. There are obviously other countries, but I think it's really important to make that connection for women's economic inclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also up to the government to make sure the environment for digital financial payments, the legal, the tax, the regulatory environments are supportive of a digital financial environment. That might include tiered, your customer requirements for very small accounts. Again, in Bangladesh, an example, employers can open accounts for their employees using employer records as one example for accounts to receive wage payments. Also, as mentioned earlier, financial identification is critical. We were just recently talking about in some countries, one of the barriers is veiled. Women who choose to veil, that identification is not always accepted. Veiled identification is not always accepted as for opening a bank account. So these are the issues that we really need to grapple with. Interoperability.
I just build on your financial identification point, Leora? You talked earlier about India's Aadhaar program, which is now, I think, 966 million. And one of the ways that it's been used to increase women's participation is that some states have used that as ID associated with ration cards. And so women are registered as head of household to be able to receive that card because of the financial ID. Without the ID, they couldn't have done that. And so it's a critical means to ensure that women have the ID to be able to then both receive the payments and get recognized as the key recipient for the government. So it was so it's really important for women's inclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. The next is need to mention to encourage interoperability between both mobile agents in countries that have multiple players. Côte d'Ivoire is a good example. Peru is another good example. As well as between mobile agents and banks to allow, to just facilitate the sort of sweeps from your mobile wallet into an interest-bearing, perhaps commitment account, as we discussed earlier. Credit information sharing. Again, this is critical. And often, many countries have public credit registries, which only registered commercial banks can participate in. These should be opened up to include utility companies, mobile companies, other sources of payments, especially for women who may not have any bank credit, but may have other payment services, such as a mobile phone in their own name. And supportive consumer protection framework. And, especially among lower, less educated, illiterate populations, making sure that there's transparency of all bank fees. You know, for example, we've heard stories on, in some countries, there's a bank fee for looking at checking your balance. And less educated women who receive a government transfer payment just want to make sure the money's there. They keep checking their balance. And every time they check, it gets smaller and smaller, and they're getting more nervous, so they keep checking. You know, they can lose half of their welfare payments to these sort of bank fees. And so just making sure that the protection, the framework protects more vulnerable recipients.
Just building on that point, Leora, one of the you mentioned Peru as a good example of the interoperability. The Modelo Peru is a platform that is not just about separate telcos or banks or others being interoperable. It's a shared platform, so it's sort of even more connected. And so one of the things that they do is on the feature phone screen, they give the balance every single time you open it, so you can see exactly how much money is in your account, which is hugely important. And that's and we can talk more about the whole interoperability issue and how the shared platform really helps, particularly women who have don't have to be on one particular phone platform, provider, a telco provider, that you can, it can be included for everybody. So we can talk more about that, but it's very important for inclusion.
Absolutely. So next are the private sector actions. Again, simply digitizing their own wage payments. This is easier said than done. There are tremendous, often regulatory hurdles in terms of financial identification to open accounts for employees. As well as we mentioned earlier, the learning to familiarity with the ATM technology. However, you know, again, as we're finding in Bangladesh, there are initial challenges, but over time, people become more comfortable with their accounts, start keeping balances over the month in the hope that they'll be able to use these accounts for cash management, a safe place to help them meet their end-of-month expenses. And you know, as mentioned here in the Findex, we find over 110 million unbanked women receive a wage payment in cash. Next point I want to make sure, talk about, over 200 million unbanked women receive cash payments for the sale of agricultural products. Now, the first thing that came to my mind was, you know, women selling stuff on the side of the road. But increasingly, that's not the case. So, for example, in Uganda and Tanzania and Kenya, especially Uganda, Tanzania, over 10% of adults, almost equal numbers of men and women, are farmers who report receiving the sale of their agricultural products directly to an account, either at the bank or on their mobile phone, which is suggesting that the hurdle of, you know, a lower-income agricultural segment is not, that we can design the right products to reach this audience. And what's going on is that many countries, think coffee, cocoa, tea, have these large, often quasi-state or state-owned warehouses or centralized purchasing. And so people selling to these centralized warehouses are now increasingly in East Africa receiving their payments directly to an account. And so this is an avenue that we, you know, can work with to increase account ownership. And especially for people working in the agricultural sector is the need for formal financial products. So these are people who more commonly receive lumpy income, who need a place to save money until the next season, who need to pre-finance their seeds, etc. And so hooking the agricultural producers into the formal financial sector can have tremendous benefits.
The Better Than Cash Alliance has done a case study in Colombia with the coffee growers that showed how initially it was just the payments that were made to an account, and then it built on to being financially included and a range of other products for both women and men. And so there's some great other work that shows how important this is, and as a means of including those who were formerly excluded into the economy.
And so more for the private sector can do. Again, we talked about this earlier. I will repeat it, on digitizing their own purchasing and payment data. I mentioned in Kenya with pharmacies. Mexico is perhaps the oldest example, Nafin, who collects where large buyers, think the Walmarts of the world, post online all receivables that they are granted by SMEs in Mexico. There are now hundreds of thousands of small SMEs who are able, so small SME in Mexico has no formal credit. However, they're sitting on Walmart receivables, which are AAA assets. And so this Nafin platform allows them to electronically and very simply sell these receivables. Banks actually now bid on purchasing these receivables and provides a critical source of short-term financing to these firms. I mentioned earlier, electric, water, trash collection payments, mobile phone payments should all be digitized and shared to develop credit scores. We also have examples of large sellers, think Home Depot, where construction workers, self-employed, buy their goods. If you're a building contractor and you're buying $100 of supplies every day, that's a good indicator to a bank that you can start buying on credit, that you have a constant cash flow coming in. You're buying the supplies, presumably you're being paid to use them. And so increasingly large sellers, particularly in the construction sector, are digitizing their purchasing information from self-employed workers and using that to extend appropriate supplier credit. Very exciting avenue, which we'll talk more about afterwards, is the large firms, think Coke, Pepsi, Unilever, who distribute goods throughout the world. So think, one register firms, the small bodegas around the world, trying to digitize that information and trying to encourage the small firms to pay them digitally. There, I might add, is a special challenge in the tremendous fear of formalization, right? So a lot of these small firms are informal, and they don't want any electronic paper trail. And so that's really a challenge that we're all working to better understand, and how to incentivize and how to incentivize small retailers that the benefits outweigh potential fears of digitization.
It would be appropriate to give a shout out to our friends at USAID and the World Economic Forum here who are working on this very issue in India. They've got a collaboration of all the businesses who are working together on this. So we look forward to seeing how it'll work out, but it's a very exciting initiative.
So finally, what can the financial sector do? It's not enough for the government and private sector. Ultimately, the financial sector has to design the right products. And so almost 600 million women pay for utilities in cash, which means they have to travel either to the utility company or a kiosk and stand online. These are women with mobile phones are as increasing number of women have mobile phones. This is a payment that can be digitized. Over 200 million women pay school fees in cash. Again, in Bangladesh, the factories report that they lose a day's production a month as the women are all taking off to go across town and pay their school fees. This is another payment that could potentially be digitized. And last but not least, training agents to educate customers. This is critical. Diamond Bank in Nigeria, in collaboration with Women's World Banking, is a great example, where they trained over 8,000 women agents to go out and help open savings accounts. There are now over 200,000 savings accounts have been opened. And so it's both training women agents, getting them more involved in the process, mobile agents, bank agents, and simply educating the agents how to work with less educated and women markets. So thank you. Pass over to Ruth.
That's just sort of the highlights, and we're going to be keeping going in the discussion. If there's any more of those examples you want to follow up on, we're happy to talk. But those are just the highlights. Just so you know why we're here together, the Better Than Cash Alliance is an alliance of governments and private sector and international organizations that are all committed to moving away from cash to some form of digital payment to reduce poverty and drive inclusive growth. So our alliance is one that catalyzes all of our different members, including many of the ones we've mentioned today, India, Peru, et cetera. And so and so if you can just go to the next slide, just by way of summarizing where we're at, this is really a call to action. The great research that Leora and all the team have done shows that what is important for women's economic participation is driving an inclusive digital financial ecosystem so that women are able to participate in the economy and then have access to the range of financial services that are necessary to help themselves get out of poverty. And so that is a really clear vision that's in front of us, and these the barriers that Leora has addressed as
need to be overcome so that we can achieve that vision. But that's where we're going, so that we're all in the same, driving towards the same goal. And so just to highlight some of the points that came from this, first of all, know where all your cash is, whether you're a government, though many of you are implementing partners for USAID, if you're working for an international organization or you're working with the government, know where all the cash is and digitize it. It's a real, many people we find don't know where all the cash payments are. They didn't know that all the agricultural workers were getting paid in cash, or the farmers, should I say, were getting paid in cash. So track where it is, whatever kind of organization you're working with, and then figure out how to digitize it. We have toolkits on our website to help you plan that kind of thing. But whatever is appropriate in your market is what's best. And it will range as to kinds of services are available, depending on whether you're in India or Bangladesh or Mexico or Peru or wherever. One of the things I wanted to also highlight was the opportunity for infrastructure partnerships. Those of you who know Kay McGowan and Priya at USAID know that their paper at the MIT Journal was really calling for creative partnerships to be able to build the infrastructure, because we're concerned about reaching the excluded. And so if everyone builds out the infrastructure, not everyone's going to be able to make money. So we have to figure out how to collaborate to build the infrastructure. And there's the Peru example is a good one here that I'm happy to go with in more depth. So creating those opportunities there to overcome the technology barriers that Leora was talking about. We can't emphasize, so that's whether you're government or international or whatever kind of organization you're in. And then particularly, again, whatever kind, to advocate for, if you're not a government person or working with governments, the digital financial ID. We've talked about that a lot, how important that is for advancing women's economic participation. So whether you're a not-for-profit, whether you're a company, whether you're working with government, this is a really important barrier to be overcome for advancing women's economic participation. And just on the business side of it, our friends at the IFC have a Women SME digital portal, but the digitizing business registration allows the formalization and allows women to participate in the financial sector and have access to a range of products. Our friends at Women's World Banking have done a lot of work on the opportunities for women in that way. And so whatever sector or whatever stakeholder you're working with, this is a really important thing. And finally, if it works for women, it works for everyone. You know, we're concerned about building an inclusive economy. Leora talked a lot about, and the report talks a lot about, overcoming the regulatory barriers, whether it's or norms. ODI's just put out a report on overcoming gender norms. Those of you who are institutional economists know about how to address changes in norms. But thinking about does it work for women means that does it work for the whole economy? And so whether it's on a policy side, if you're a financial service provider, whether you're a microfinance provider, whether you're any other kind of service provider, just to challenge yourself, does it work for women? So that you can then address issues of inclusion. So use that, whatever kind of stakeholder you're in, to use that as a way of challenging yourself to be able to then think about how to advance women's economic participation and to use the technology that is available in your market to achieve that. So that's by way of summary highlights, and we'd love to hear your questions and comments. And I think back to you, Joy. Thank you very much.